So, hi, Mimi. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Rose.
So, could you first introduce yourself, kind of like tell us about your education and your career relating to sustainability?
Oh, thank you. So, my name is Mumbe. I come from Kenya, and at the moment, I live in Kisumu, but I think I really identify from my home. My home is in Kitui County. It's in the southwestern part of the country, and it's a really dry place. And coming from that locality has enabled me to create this sense of wanting to do much more, because you find that most of my, can call them village mates, are involved in agriculture, small scale agriculture, and we are majorly described as agropastoralists. And with that, I decided to do a degree in international relations and diplomacy at Maseno University. And this course really gave me an opportunity to be able to focus on different areas, which I find quite exciting. I think one thing which particularly stood out for me in my undergrad was talking about urbanization, because that's something which is going on. Like when you look at Kenya, you find that after we changed our constitution in 2010, we started having county governments, and that means that we have a most decentralized system of governance, and we have these small towns growing, and probably there'll be cities in some few years, because I think from our Urban Act, I think 2010, also says that a city is a place which probably more than 500,000 people reside. So you find that many of those small towns are going towards that level. But when you look at how they are developing, you find that there are different questions, because back before that decentralization happened, you used to find slums are in urban areas, like the usual urban areas, because now we have three main cities, that's Kisumu, Nairobi, and Mombasa. But right now you are seeing slums all over in the countries. So I think it's more of an urban sprawl. And it made me want to see how best we can be able to ensure that we develop sustainably. And after I finished that, my undergrad, I proceeded to do a master's in disaster management and sustainable development at Masinde Muliro University of Technology, still here in Kenya. And with that, I've been able to, right now I'm working on my research, which is around urbanization and how it shapes access to education among women who reside in slums, because you find that even when you look at urbanization, you find that probably women will be the most people who reside there. So how differently are they affected by urbanization, and how best can different stakeholders, including government, be able to support them well? And apart from that, my education bit, I previously used to work for a local organization called Pacemaker International, but 2 months ago I transitioned to Peace First, where I work as a program operations coordinator. But apart from that, I've also worked with my friends, and we were able to start a community-based organization called Tuvamwe, which is based in Kitui. So Tuvamwe is a Kamba word. Kamba is my ethnic language, and it means we are together. And with this, we majorly focus on harnessing the demographic dividends to increase the investments in youth in the sectors of education and environment. And from our education bit, we started doing a program called Fun While Learning, whereby we assess children and see if they have the literacy levels required for their grade. And if they don't, then we group them according to letters, words, paragraph, and stories. And then we use fun games to ensure that the children are able to improve. And after trying our first boot camp, I met with currently my co-founder. His name is Edward. and we were able to digitize the process of doing the assessment and created a planning to test it out. And so far we've been able to assess close to 200 children, and we are hoping that we will continue to grow our impact and ensure that, yeah, that we are able to like be at the forefront of improving education in Kenya. Yes, so that's pretty.
Oh, wow. Wait, so can you tell me more about the kind of program that you implemented in schools? Like, how has that changed how students are learning? How has that like improved and stuff like that?
Oh, so last year during the COVID period, maybe I can give a context. So globally, most of the schools were closed, and you find that the children were not actively, obviously, going to school. And then what we did is we identified four community volunteers, and we were able to assess over 100 children. And from there, we selected 44 children. The children were selected on the basis of who could not read a story with comprehension. And after that, we involved them in boot camps, which were running 1 hour every day for 10 days. And one thing which you find quite interesting from the model is that most of the children were able to improve at least by a level, which was good. And you find that apart from that, we also noticed that we need to ensure that this is an ongoing process, because I think there's something, I don't know how that can be solved, but that's like a very, something complex to handle. You find that here in Kenya, the main language of instruction in school is in English, but realistically, we barely speak English. Like, for example, I speak English at school or work. And in many cases, we speak either our ethnic language or Swahili. But when this particular language is used in classroom instruction and children do not understand, then children are set for failure, and probably this will impact them transitioning to institutes of higher education. And therefore, now we are planning to do that small projects we did at randomly during the COVID break to the school system, whereby we'll ensure that every maybe day, maybe during games time, because here in Kenya, most of the time, school end at 3:10 officially, 3:10 p.m. So after that, maybe the children can have a 1 hour session to ensure that we are able to build on that. And as we also think about it, I've been also wondering, like now, because you are focusing on children who are senior grades, we're also trying to crack an answer and see how we can also help the children who are at very low grades, so that by the time they reach the senior grades, then they can be able to read with comprehension. Yeah.
Gotcha. So you're working on, did you say you're working on older, the senior children?
Yes. Senior children in the primary context mean children between the grades 4 to 8. So those are children who are aged between 9 years to around 15, but sometimes you even get children who are at 18 years in those classes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So do you see a difference? Do you see a bigger difference if it starts with the younger children rather than the older children, I mean? Or do you think it's about the same?
Yeah, I think that it can be... It can be very interesting trying to, honestly, I have not like interacted with any data indicating how different it will be if we worked with younger children. So I'm imagining children between the ages of 6 to 8 or yeah. 5 to 8 or 9 years. So I haven't interacted with that, but I tend to think that now because our learning camps involves fun games, children reading stories, small stories, a lot of pictures, and playing with cards. So I think that if we did it for younger children, maybe something we can test in the future, probably they might be able, more open to trying out what you're doing and also build on their foundational skills when they are younger. But when they are older, they can focus on learning more complex things, which probably might help like start their careers when they are young. Yeah,
definitely. So do you think you would have like any unforgettable stories relating to sustainability? Like when you think about it, do you have any stories that either stand out or are your favorite or anything like that?
Trying to think, whoa, that's a tricky one. So I'm trying to think, in my head, I figure out sustainability is the ability to meet the needs of the current generation without compromising the ability of the future generations to meet those particular needs. And so the story I'm going to give you is not exactly related to sustainability, but it's something which I found mind-blowing and probably maybe something I will wanna work on in the future. So in my previous job, I used to do, to work with young people who just graduated from high school. And would place them in schools and also something close to what I'm talking about. So we'll run literacy camps. Those children. And then activities, we have this game. And then there is, when you're at a school, you ask the children to try to think about words which are related to that particular thing you wrote. For example, when you're talking about school, you can talk about classrooms, you can talk about teachers, pupils, that kind of thing. And so in that particular day, I wrote the word house in the middle. I think it was house, yeah. And then we asked the children to name what they see in the house. So yeah, they were starting like bed, and then they thought about shoes, clothes. And I'm like, I thought when you're talking about house, we're supposed to talk about something like, maybe we can talk about the kitchen. So many kids were like, we don't have one. And then when you talk about something which we see it essential, like having bedrooms, they tell you like, we do not have a bedroom, we just live in a single room. And then you're like trying to like understand where these children get the perspective from. You find that I came to understand that most of the children actually live in one single room. And even if they have a family of 8 or 10, they're just restricted to that one particular room. So that so when you're doing these kind of activities with children, you find that it's something maybe strange for them, because they will be wondering, why do you need a kitchen? You can just cook from anywhere in the house. And I came to realize that there's a lot which goes on at a household level. And I think it's up to us to be able to, like, if we are supporting maybe poor people who live in urban slums, maybe we need to like focus on the household level before like we try to do like those major big projects, probably which might not really affect their livelihood. So that story was all over the place. I don't know if you got it, but yeah.
Oh wow. So when you started that question, it kind of, the Wi-Fi cut out a little bit. So did you make up this game? Is that like a game like you guys like normally do in schools?
Yeah, so although we did not make up the game, I think it's always been there, but we just use it because we find it very fun and engaging for children. So it's called a mind map. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I can just text you. I don't know if I have videos of children doing that, but I'll check it out and see if I could send you a
video. Oh, mine. Yeah. Mine map. Oh, got it. That's awesome. So I know that you said earlier that you studied, was it international relations in your undergrad? Yes. How did you decide to study that? Did you always know you were interested in sustainability or that you would go down this path, or were you thinking about something different?
Honestly, when I completed my high school, I wanted to either do law or international relations. I think it was both from curiosity, because in at the high school levels, I felt that I was good at humanities. That's, I don't know how to call it, but it's more of history and some geography, though I did not major in geography. And so for that, we have this interesting system in Kenya, like when you perform relatively well, you have a government scholarship, and then you're placed according to the degrees you applied for. So I either applied for law and international relations. So I got placed at Maseno University to do international relations. But I think when I look at it, because I tend to think that you can never know exactly where you've been unless you like turn your life and try to like reflect on what has happened in the past. And at this point of my life, I feel like it was a good idea taking international relations, because I feel that it made me more aware about what is happening locally and also at an international scope, and majorly how to like interact with different things and themes. And I think this also enabled me to be really interested in how we can talk more about sustainability and try to figure out how we can involve various stakeholders to support this.
Yeah. Wow. What would you say are some of your objectives and goals regarding sustainability, kind of through majoring that and getting your master's?
Pardon. I think there's something happening to my internet.
Yeah, I think as well. I can repeat myself. So I said, what are some of the objectives and goals you have regarding sustainability, like from going through your undergrad and getting your master's and where you are today?
I think my goal is one of my major goals, which is also related to how I perceive sustainability, is the way that we are able to meet the needs of the present without compromising the ability of the future generations to meet their needs. So maybe to add more context on that, I'm trying to think of something like in terms of what we practice most at home, which is agriculture. So yeah. You find that at the moment, now because it's a little bit dry, some people are forced to drill wells in the middle of the river. I'm not a geographer, but I think that that's quite a bad idea, because I think that if you drill a well in the middle of the river, probably the water level is going to go really low. And then when it's dry, now because our rivers are seasonal, we don't have water flowing through the river the whole of the year, maybe during rainy seasons, that's like 2-3 months a year, you find that it will be very difficult for us to be able to get water. So I, from that context, from my home, I think that we might want to like try to have more investments about on different technologies and see how best we can be able to harvest water. Maybe have a dike or build something which will enable us to have the water, not just like drilling wells. And I think another goal of sustainability is ensuring that all people have access to their basic needs, because I think that when you don't have the bare minimum, then you are not able to like look at what's going to happen in the future. maybe to contextualize this, I'm trying to figure out maybe a person residing in a rural area. Let's say I still use the example of my home. Let's say it's in March or August. Yeah, probably August is the driest month. And then you do not have food. And probably you do not have food, you do not have water, and still children have to go to school, and you're also required to pay school fees and something like that. So you find that many people are forced to do things, do activities which have a very adverse impact on the environment. For example, before 2019, there was a lot of charcoal harvesting. It was so interesting to see big lorries filled with charcoal bags. I don't know where they were, probably they were going to sell it in urban areas. But you find that in a period of 2-3 years, forests were cleared, some wild animals disappeared, because that we were, many people were so stuck on just surviving for today. And maybe we always say that tomorrow can worry for itself, but you just want to live.
Oh, sorry, I think it cut out a little bit. So you were talking about the wells in the water, correct? So how have you seen sustainability, I guess, in your, like around you, basically? Like, have you seen any other efforts to be sustainable in that way?
I did not understand the question.
So like, how have you seen sustainable efforts around you, basically? So I know you're talking about like getting water and getting water a better way, and not just drilling wells in the water.
So honestly, there has been a very little investment in the concept of sustainability, because I think maybe I'm trying to like just use classroom definition and try to understand it between maybe developed countries and developing countries. And you find that maybe in some countries it might be easier to like try to see, maybe invest on technologies which can facilitate, maybe if it's access to water, maybe you have a lot of investment around it. But when you look at maybe where I come from, you find that most of us are very focused on surviving for today, and we are unable to ensure, we are unable to like invest more in ensuring that the resources we have are not getting depleted. But that's not like a really grim picture. Maybe maybe we can say that when you're focusing on something bigger, like maybe accessing a lot of water for your farm. But when you dive down to how many rural communities are built, apart from the new issues such as cutting charcoal, you find that from our African perspective, we are very particular about preserving our environment. For example, in my home, when we are going to harvest charcoal, harvest firewood. So we don't go cutting all the trees. You cut the trees which are already dry, or maybe the ones which have fallen, to ensure that we are not going to like spoil, we are not going to like cut trees which might help you in the future. Or else when you're keeping animals, we are very like, we pay attention to the environment and try to see that, let's say if you have a small parcel of land for like 2 acres, you cannot keep 100 cows. So you are very careful to ensure that you are able to just keep enough cattle, which will be able to sustain your land, and ensure that maybe when it rains next time, you have enough forage for your animals. And then when you look at the farm level, that these examples are very related to rural areas. You find that, for example, when you're doing cropping, we do not really do monocropping. Like, we plant a maize along beans or peas. Now, because you already know that the peas bring, I think, nitrogen. I forgot my science. So to the soil. So you find that we always have these small ways of ensuring that we are preserving what the resources we have for the future. But I think that if we invest more on technologies and try to think on how best we can improve it, probably we can scale it and ensure that it's more noticeable and also it's more researchable. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. For those listening to this podcast, how do you think that we could implement sustainability kind of in our daily lives? Like, what are some small things that you would suggest to be more sustainable?
So I think the small ways I would suggest is like maybe reduce the amount of water we use. I know yeah. that's crazy depending on the context, but I tried to think that in many cases, let me try to imagine my case, we have like a lot of, sometimes you might end up using too much water, maybe for something which was not required. So maybe we can try to do that in our day-to-day lives, be cognizant of how best we can support that. And apart from that, I think I read somewhere that most of, I think 70% of our waste last 2 years from here, from Kenya, has been food waste. So you find that we have a lot of waste coming from what we consume, but at the same time, we also have regions which do not have maybe enough to eat or something like that. So we can also try to see how best we can do to ensure that we limit that wastage which comes from food-related waste. And I think the other bit which maybe can be trying to look at electricity and try to see how we can also like figure out how best we can use renewable sources of energy. I'm talking about that, but any companies at the moment over here, solar systems and also using wind vanes or what they're called, something like that. So you find that it's a lot of progress to ensure that we are able to like use more sustainable ways to be able to have electricity.
Yeah, definitely. Cutting back a little bit will definitely add up to make a big change. So I love that. Do you have any final notes? Any final thoughts to kind of sum up this podcast?
So my final thoughts are around sustainability is that I think sustainability is easy and at the same time complex. Because I tend to think that we have a bit, but look at it from a more, we try to contextualize it to maybe where we live. And you find that probably we can try to have a system whereby we have bare minimums and ensure that maybe everybody is able to, okay. I think I lost my flow of thought, but I was trying to think that sustainability is more
Okay. I'm sorry, it cut out. We can work on that in the editing. But I'm sorry, at final notes, did you have any kind of final thoughts to sum up what we've been talking about?
Yeah, so I repeat what I just said. For a weird reason, I just forgot. So I was trying to say that sustainability is more contextualized. Like, you find that when you look at sustainability, especially here from Kenya, you find that there's a lot of investments which is required to ensure that we are all able to maybe effectively say that we are supporting sustainability. Because I'm trying to imagine that from our past conversations, I'm trying to imagine that if we don't have access to basic needs or maybe access to infrastructure or infrastructure, for example, if you're doing agriculture, you don't have access to water and that kind of thing, then it makes it so difficult for you to be able to think about what's happening, what's going to happen in the future. So my idea is just trying to see how best we can link sustainable development and access to basic needs. And I know there's much research about that, but it's just something which I as a person, and maybe to the people who be listening, I would want them to like think more about it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that was all the questions we had today, but thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. And it was a pleasure to finally get to meet you, heard about you from Dr. Park.
You as well.